Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode 41 of the S3 podcast. Today's topic will be the murder of Junko Furuta. But first off, let's start with two intro topics, one of which is Sophie Scholl. Her name is not widely known outside Germany, but Sophie Scholl is an iconic figure in her native country, and her story is extraordinary. This weekend, many will commemorate the 100th anniversary of the birth of a young woman who famously stood up to Adolf Hitler and paid for it with her life. Her resistance is retold countless times in books, films and plays, and it continues to inspire people today. Sophie Scholl was born in 1921 into a country in turmoil, but her childhood was secure and comfortable. Her father was the mayor of the southwestern town of Fürstenberg, though the family would later move to Ulm, and Sophie, along with her five brothers and sisters, was brought up in a Lutheran household in which Christian values mattered. But by the time she reached her teens, Adolf Hitler was running the country. Don't tell me it's for the fatherland. At first, Sophie and her older brother Hans supported the National Socialist Party. Like many other youngsters, he joined the party's Hitler Youth Movement, and she, its sister organisation, the League of German Girls. Her father, an ardent critic of Hitler, was by all accounts horrified by their initial enthusiasm, and the influence of family and friends gradually began to take effect. The siblings, ultimately unable to reconcile their own liberal leanings with the politics of the Third Reich, and noticing the way in which Jewish acquaintances and artists were treated, began to view the regime through increasingly critical eyes. And and by the time Hitler invaded Poland, that had hardened into opposition, as young German men were sent off to fight, Sophie wrote rather bitterly to her boyfriend Fritz Hartsnagel, who was also a soldier, "I can't understand how some people continuously risk other people's lives. I will never understand it, and I think it's terrible. Don't tell me it's for the fatherland." This recently launched Instagram account, recreating Sophie Scholl's story with modern actors, has attracted 500,000 followers. Sophie followed her brother Hans to Munich University, where he was studying medicine, and the siblings socialised with the same group of friends, said to have been united by their mutual appreciation for art, culture and philosophy. Sophie, who studied the subject along with biology, is said to have liked to dance and play the piano, and she was a talented painter. But there were violent times. Some of the students had seen active service, they were living in a dictatorship and they were determined to resist. "We won't be silenced." There were just six members of the White Rose Group, originally founded by Sophie's brother, Hans Scholl, and his friend Alexander Sommerell. They were joined by Sophie, Christoph Probst and Willy Graf, and by one of their professors, Kurt Huber. Supported by a network of friends and supporters, they printed and distributed leaflets encouraging citizens to resist the Nazi regime, denouncing the murder of Jewish people and demanding an end to the war. "We won't be silenced. Read one. We are your bad conscience. The White Rose won't leave you in peace." The group produced their sixth pamphlet at the beginning of 1943. The German name is forever damaged if the German youth doesn't finally rise up, avenge and atone at the same time, cross their tormentors and found a new spiritual Europe. It was to be their last. On 18th of February 1943, Hans and Sophie were handing out the leaflets at the university. It's not clear why Sophie climbed to the top floor landing that overlooked the airy atrium of the university's main building and flung a stack of pamphlets over the balustrade. Most assume she wanted as many students as possible to see them. But as the papers fluttered down to the ground, she was watched by a caretaker who betrayed her to the Gestapo, the secret police. She and her brother were interrogated and, after a show trial, sentenced to death. They refused to betray the rest of the group, but the authorities tracked them down anyway within a few months. The friends had all been executed. On the morning that she went to the guillotine, Sophie, aged 21, said, "Such a fine sunny day, and I have to go. What does my death matter if through us thousands of people are awakened and stirred to action?" Those words, her bravery, are still honoured in Germany today, where schools and roads bear her name and that of her brother. It's the source of regret for some that the other members of the White Rose Group are rather less prominently commemorated, and her name is easily exploited. There was an outrage when, a few years ago, the far-right party, AfD, issued a slogan. Sophie's soul would have voted AfD at a rally against COVID measures in Hanover last November. A young woman jumped onto the stage and compared herself to Sophie's soul. But on what would have been her 100th birthday, the German Mint is issuing a commemorative coin. There will be dedicated church services, and there's a new Instagram channel dedicated to her life. Many here will quietly reflect on the life of a young woman whose courage and conviction still stir hearts and minds today. And I do truly recommend, if you do use social media such as Instagram, to check out that page, Sophie's Soul page. If you bear with me 1 minute while I check. But I think it's important to remember the importance of the people who stand up to, you know, the people who are in power, who oppose what they do. And it's people like Sophie Soul, Rosa Parks in the black community. It's people like these who we should remember. If you go to Instagram and type Sophie Soul, that's SophieScholl, then the Instagram account should pop up. But the next intro topic is of a YouTuber by the name of Nikki Philippi. And if you are a pet owner or dog owner out there, then this might upset you a bit. So fair warning. But an influencer couple in the United States have been slammed after revealing they had put down their family dog for being aggressive and biting their son. Lifestyle influencer Nikki Philippi, who has more than 1.28 million YouTube subscribers, revealed in an Instagram post this week that the family had euthanized their dog Bowser. Bowser had an aggressive side that reared its ugly head a few times over the years, she said. After a lot of counsel, we decided it was time for Bowser to pass on peacefully. Nikki explained in the post, which contained a series of photos from a photo shoot with Bowser, that making the decision was one of the saddest days of my life. In a YouTube video titled "We Have Some Really Sad News," Nikki and her husband Dan Philippi explained that Bowser had seriously injured a couple different dogs. Nikki, who became tearful as she spoke about missing Bowser's smell, said they had spoken to a local dog shelter about having him rehomed, only to be told it wasn't an option for the dog. Recently, Bowser had bit their son Logan on the face after he attempted to take food from a dog. Now, it's important for me to say that they had Bowser, their beloved dog, for 9 years. Okay? And this dog, I think the breed is a pit bull. I may have got that wrong, but as a puppy, this dog was treated very badly, and this dog should have had this Bowser get proper training, and that sort of thing, which you're supposed to do, but they never did that. And they never sought to get his behavioural problems sorted, or attempted to reach out to anyone to train a dog. They never made any effort. And although, yes, I understand he attacked your son, I understand that. Right, I'm not here saying that he shouldn't have done that, obviously, that's wrong. But the way they went about it is disgusting. And the bite wasn't bad, but Logan still had a little mark on his face from the incident. YouTubers to put down dog, disgusting. The couple's decision to euthanize Bowser was slammed, with Nikki forced to disable comments on the YouTube video and make her Instagram private. Bear with me 1 minute. Now, the way they euthanized this dog was, Nikki Philippi's husband, Dan Philippi, used a phrase called "Old Yeller," which basically means he took the dog, Bowser, outside, he had a gun, and he basically shot the dog. So he basically killed the dog, all because he attacked his son. But the reason why this is so disgusting and so controversial is that they had this dog for 9 years. They knew Bowser had behavioural problems. They knew he had problems with, like, if people taking food or whatever, but they never sought dog training, and it's just disgusting. And people on Twitter labelled the decision disgusting, pointing out that Nikki could have used the online audience to find a new home for Bowser, which she could have done. She had a public platform. I'm sure there are many people who would have taken that dog and given it a nice home, one person tweeted. Others took issue with the disturbing fact that Nikki had posted a photo shoot with Bowser to announce he had been put down. You heard that correct. they took a photo, they had a photo shoot prior to them euthanizing the dog. The whole Nikki Philippa thing makes me sick to my stomach. How do you have a dog for 9 years, claim it's aggressive, and take a photo shoot with it before putting it down under the treated? The couple stoked further anger when Dan reportedly changed his Instagram bio to read "dog murderer, allegedly." He has since removed the reference, however, not before screenshots of it were taken and circulated online. What to do with an aggressive dog? According to the RSPCA, aggression in dogs can be caused by underlying fear and anxiety, and split into six different types: territorial, predatory, fear, pain, sibling rivalry, or sexually related. The RSPCA says that aggression in dogs can be successfully treated and managed as long as the dog's triggers for aggression can be identified, usually with the help of a veterinary behavioural specialist. Treatment for aggression often involves behavioural modification techniques. These techniques use positive reinforcement as the basis, reward good behaviour, and avoid reinforcing unwanted behaviour, the RSPCA said. But they never did any of this. They had the dog for 9 years. Right. So them claiming the dog was so aggressive, that doesn't line up. He's associating with food, right, which can be a problem for dogs, was never treated, he was never given proper training. You know, as one person said, they could have rehomed him, right? But no. They decided to do a little family photo shoot and then the next minute euthanize a dog. I think it's disgusting, and I think, and I hope that Nikki Philippi and her husband gets what coming to them in terms of losing their ability to use YouTube as a platform. You know, according to what I've read, she's already lost 10,000 subscribers. I have a feeling that she's going to lose a hell of a lot more. And I think it's in their best interest if they were to, you know, slowly, you know, leave the platform, because they have a son, and you know, I'm gonna be very careful in how I say this, but If they can so easily, you know, put this dog down, right, then, and especially Dan Philippi, who especially is a little bit creepy, especially when he said, I wanted to take the dog out and do Old Yeller style. Oh, that, yeah, that's not something that a normal person would say. And what's more suspicious, or not suspicious, but more concerning, is the fact that that was his immediate thought. His immediate thought was, "I'm gonna kill the dog." Really? So yeah. Those were the two intro topics, but now on to the main one. Also, before I start, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at S3Podcast_. Also on Facebook, S3 Podcast. Also, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Spotify, and wherever else. And yeah, let's get right into it. Furuta was born in Misato, Saitama Prefecture. She lived with her parents, her elder brother, and her younger brother as a teenager. She attended Yasuo Miyanami High School and worked part-time at a plastic moulding factory during after-school hours since October 1988. She did this to save up money for a graduation plan she had arranged. Furuta also accepted a job at an electronics retailer where she planned on working after graduation. At high school, Furuta was well liked by her classmates, with high grades and very infrequent absences. The perpetrators were four teenage boys, Hiroshi Miyano, Miyano Hiroshi, 18 years old, Zo Ogura, Ogura Joe, 17, Shinji Minato, 16, and Yasushi Watanabe, 17, who were respectively referred to as A, B, C, and D in court documents. At the time of the crime, they used the second floor of Minato's house as a hangout and had, as Chimpira previously engaged in, crimes including purse snatching, extortion, and rape. On November 25th, 1988, Miyano and Minato wandered around Misato with the intention of robbing and raping local women. At 8:30 p.m., they spotted Furuta riding her bike home after she had finished a shift at her job. Under Miyano's orders, Minato kicked Furuta off her bike and fled the scene. Miyano, under the pretense of witnessing the attack by coincidence, approached Furuta and offered to walk her home safely. Furuta, accepting this offer, was unaware that Miyano was leading her to a nearby warehouse, where he revealed his Yakuza connections. He raped her in the warehouse and again in a nearby hotel, threatening to kill her. From the hotel, Miyano called Minato and his other friends, Zo Ogura and Yasushi Watanabe, and bragged to them about the rape. Ogura reportedly asked Miyano to keep her in captivity in order to allow numerous people to sexually assault her. The group had a history of gang rape and had recently kidnapped and raped another girl whom they released afterward. Around 3 a.m., Miyano took Furuta to a nearby park, where Minato, Ogura and Watanabe were waiting. They had learned her home address from a notebook in her backpack and told her that they knew where she lived and that Yakuza members would kill her family if she attempted to escape. The four boys overpowered her, took her to a house in the Ayase district of Adachi and gang raped her. The house, which was owned by Minato's parents, soon became their regular gang hangout. On November 27th, Furuta's parents contacted the police about her disappearance. To discourage further investigation, the kidnappers forced her to call her mother and say she had run away but was safe and staying with some friends. They also forced Furuta to stop the police investigation when Minato's parents were present. Furuta was forced to act as his girlfriend. They dropped this pretense when it became clear that Minato's parents would not report them to the police. Minato stated that they did not intervene because they were aware of Miyano's Yakuza connections and feared retaliation. And because their own son was increasingly violent toward them, Minato's brother was also aware of the situation, but did nothing to prevent it. The group held Furuta captive in the Minato residence for 40 days. where they repeatedly beat, raped and tortured her. According to their statements, the four saved her pubic hair, forced her to dance to music while naked and masturbate in front of them, and left her on the balcony in the middle of the night with little clothing. They inserted objects into her vagina and anus, including a lit match, a metal rod and a bottle, and force-fed her with large amounts of alcohol, milk and water. She was also forced to smoke multiple cigarettes at once and inhaled paint thinner. In one incident, Miana repeatedly burned Furuta's legs and arms with lighter fluid. By the end of December, Furuta was severely malnourished after being fed only small amounts of food and eventually only milk. Due to her severe injuries and infected burns, she became unable to go to the downstairs toilet and became confined to the floor of Minato's room in a state of extreme weakness. On 4th of January 1989, after losing a game of Mahjong, Miyano decided to vent his anger on Furuta. The group kicked and punched her, ignited a candle and dripped hot wax on her face, placed two short candles on her eyelids and forced her to drink her own urine. After kicking her, she fell onto a stereo unit and collapsed into a fit of convulsions. Since she was bleeding profusely and pus was emerging from her infected burns, the four boys covered their hands in plastic bags so that her pus wouldn't get on their hands. They continued to beat her and dropped an iron exercise ball onto her stomach several times. They poured lighter fluid onto her thighs, arms, face and stomach and set her on fire once again. Furuta allegedly made attempts to put out the fire, but gradually became unresponsive. The attack reportedly lasted 2 hours. Furuta eventually succumbed to her wounds and died. Less than 24 hours after her death, Minato's brother called to tell him that Furuta appeared to be dead. Afraid of being penalised for murder, the group wrapped her body in blankets and shoved her into a travel bag. They then put her body in a 55-gallon, 208-litre drum and filled it with wet concrete around 8 p.m. They loaded it and eventually disposed the drum into a cement truck in Kyoto, Tokyo. On January 23, 1989, Miyano and Ogura were arrested for the gang rape of the 19-year-old whom they had kidnapped in December on 29th of March. The two police officers came in to interrogate them as women's underwear had been found at their addresses. During the interrogation, Miyano believed that one of the officers was aware of his culpability in Furuta's murder. Thinking that Joe Ogura had confessed to the crimes against Furuta, Miyano told the police where to find Furuta's body. The police were initially puzzled by the confession, as they had been referring to the murder of a different woman and her 7-year-old son that had occurred 9 days prior to Furuta's abduction. That case remains unsolved to this day. The police found the drum containing Furuta's body the following day. She was identified via fingerprints on 1st of April, 1989. Joe Ogura was arrested for a separate sexual assault and subsequently rearrested for Furuta's murder. The arrest of Watanabe, Minato and Minato's brother followed. Several other accomplices who participated in Furuta's abuse were officially identified, including Tetsuo Nakamura and Koichi Ihara, who were charged with rape after their DNA was found on and inside the victim's body. Despite the brutality of their crime, the identities of the boys were sealed by the court, as they were all considered to be juveniles at the time of the crime. Journalists from the Shukan Bunsen magazine discovered their identities, however, and published them. They stated that given the severity of the crime, the accused did not deserve to have their right to anonymity upheld. All four boys pled guilty to committing bodily injury that resulted in death, rather than murder. In July 1990, a lower court sentenced Hiroshi Miyano, the alleged leader of the crime, to 17 years in prison. He appealed his sentence, but Tokyo High Court Judge Ryuji Yanashi sentenced him to an additional 3 years in prison. The 20-year sentence is the second highest sentence given in Japan before life imprisonment. He was 18 at that time of the murder. Miyano's mother reportedly paid 50 million yen, that's $425,000 in compensation, ordered by the civil court after selling their family home. Miyano was denied parole in 2004. In January 2013, Miyano was rearrested for fraud. Due to insufficient evidence, he was released without charge later that month. Nobuharu Minato, who originally received a 4 to 6 year sentence, was resentenced to 5 to 9 years by Judge Ryuji Yanashi upon appeal. He was 16 at the time of the murder. Minato's parents and brother were not charged. Furuta's parents were dismayed by the sentences received by their daughter's killers and won a civil suit against the parents of Nobuharu Minato, in whose home the crimes were committed. After his release, Minato moved in with his mother. He has not worked since. In 2018, Minato was arrested again for attempted murder. After beating a 32-year-old man with a metal rod and slashing his throat with a knife. Yasushi Watanabe, who was originally sentenced to 3 to 4 years in prison, received an upgraded sentence of 5 to 7 years. He was 17 at the time of the murder. For his role in the crime, Yo Ogawa served 8 years in a juvenile prison before he was released in August 1999. He was 17 at the time of the murder. After his release, he is said to have boasted about his role in the kidnapping, rape and torture of Furuta. In July 2004, he was arrested for assaulting Takatoshi Isano, an acquaintance he thought his girlfriend may have been involved with. Ogawa tracked Isano down, beat him and shoved him into his truck. He drove him from Adachi to his mother's bar in Misato, where he allegedly beat Isano for 4 hours. During that time, Ogawa repeatedly threatened to kill the man, telling him that he had killed before and knew how to get away with it. He was sentenced to 7 years in prison for assaulting Isano and has since been released. Ogawa's mother allegedly vandalised Furuta's grave, stating that she had ruined her son's life. Yeah, okay. It was really around, but okay. That does not make sense to me. I'm sorry, but your son ruined a young girl's life forever. You're saying she ruined your son's life. Look, how about get fucked? Seriously. It has also been reported that Ogawa had depleted his father's savings, money which was intended to be provided as a restitution to Furuta's family, buying and consuming a number of luxury goods. The sentence was largely regarded as being far too light for the crimes committed, and all four individuals were protected by special provisions, applied to individuals 18 years old and younger. During sentencing, the judge commended that exceptionally grave and atrocious violence had been inflicted upon the victim, and that Junko Furuta had been murdered so brutally at the age of 17 that her soul must be wandering in torment. Upon hearing the details of the brutal rape and torture, a spectator in the gallery fainted, Ferruccio's mother also reported he had a mental breakdown, which required psychiatric treatment. Giancarlo Ferruccio's funeral was held on 2nd of April 1989. One of her friend's memorial addresses stated, "Sun Chan, welcome back. I have never imagined that we would see you again in this way. You must have been in so much pain, so much suffering. The happy we all made for the school festival looked really good on you. We will never forget you. I have heard that the principal has presented you with a graduation certificate. So we graduated together. All of us, Jun Chan, there is no more pain, no more suffering. Please rest in peace." Ferruccio's intended future employer presented her parents with the uniform she would have worn in the position she had accepted. The uniform was placed in her casket at her graduation. Ferruccio's school principal presented her a high school diploma, which was given to her parents. The location near where Future's body was discovered has been developed since and is now Wakasu Park. At least three books have been written about the crime and exploitation film: Joshi Kosai, Konkurito Zume, Sasugen Jiken. About the incident was directed by Katsuyo Masamura in 1995. Yuji Kitagawa, later a member of the music duo Yuju, played the role of the principal culprit, and Maya Sasaki played the role of Futa. The case was also the inspiration for the film Concrete in 2004 and the manga 17 Sai. And, you know, just, and unfortunately, you know, with these types of unfortunate murders, what's even more sad is, despite, you know, these people getting arrested, you know, that's not going to be enough for the parents who have lost their daughter. You know, the pain of losing someone is far greater than any punishment you can bestow upon anyone. But I think I'm gonna have to be needing to take a break and, you know, watch something funny. But yeah, thank you for joining and listening. Do please follow us on Instagram at s3podcast_. And until the next time, have a great evening, guys.